Dude,
that's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to The Smiley Show. I'm Charlie Hume, and he is Smiley Kaufman, and his background is, this is really, you've either won a ton of tournaments since we last talked, or you're in a new location. Please explain. What's going on behind you?
Oh yeah, just you know, won 17 PGA Tour events overnight. I mean, I really need to like try to find a setup like this, and then maybe even copy some of these trophies and just act like I'm a 17-time PGA Tour championship, or I could just be in Justin Thomas's office. Either or.
JT's office is not a bad place to record a podcast as far as visuals go. So thank you, JT, for letting us squat in your property. And I mean, I'm sure later in the episode we'll get into why you're in JT's office. I also want to draw attention to something new in my background, because the Gnome family is growing. You got a new guy right here. We got a little RBC Heritage Gnome. How about that?
Wow. Does he have a name?
He has a name, and he's named. Yes. Yes, you can.
Tarney.
Tarney with a T.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that was a name. So that is not
like a tarted jacket. Isn't that with the?
I think it's Tartan. Tartan. T-A-T-A-R-T-A-N. So Tardy. Tardy could be a name.
Tarty. Excuse me.
Tardy could be his nickname.
So it's not a tartan jacket. It's a. God, I was at a word. I just like read that word on Twitter the other day. I was like, oh, that's what that thing's called.
Okay. Yeah, it's a look. That's a look. That's for sure. His name is, I'm naming after the person who took the time to go and buy this out of the shop and then went and shipped this to me, Carlos. Carlos Rojas of PGA Tour Radio. So this is Carlos the Gnome. He joins Larry the Masters Gnome and our growing gnome family.
Can I make one suggestion if Carlos doesn't stick?
Please.
Can we go with Ted?
Ted the Gnome. Ted could be maybe his middle name's Carlos and his first name's Ted. We call him Teddy.
I just think it's like in honor of Ted Scott here with the Gnome.
In honor of Ted Scott, who very politely declined our invitation to join the show and talk gnomes, like in the most polite possible way, but also promised us that if he names his gnome, because he, of course, now we're really kind of going deep cut on the gnome stuff. He, of course, got a Masters gnome, was pictured buying a Masters gnome, reached out to him for comment to see if he wanted to join for 5 or 10 minutes. He said, listen, I'm just herd mentality on this like everybody else. I'm just trying to get my hands on a gnome. Don't know why. But if he names his gnome, he's promised to update us so we can report on the show. I've suggested Looper. So I like Looper for his gnome, and I like Teddy for our gnome. Theodore Carlos, the gnome. So there we have it. The Gnome family continues to grow. Thank you to Carlos. Thank you also. We had some fans of the show. Connor Chandler reached out, said, hey, would love to try to track down a gnome for you. And then he got there on Saturday and all the gnomes were gone at the RBC Heritage.
Oh,
so
wow.
There's a rampant gnome reseller problem that's happening. That's probably like a topic for another day.
We gotta get to the bottom of it.
We gotta get to the bottom of that. I'll tell you on another day, because we've used upwards of 4 minutes now talking about the topic du jour, which is Scottie Scheffler, man. I mean, here's the thing I had to laugh about in approaching this episode is we last year recorded a numerous podcasts where we're like, what else is there to say about Scottie Scheffler? He plays the same round of golf every single time. And then, you know, the results are the same and he does it again and again. Like, what do we say now? Like, he's won 5 of his last 4 starts, and he narrowly missed a 5th win with a 5-foot birdie putt that would have sent the Houston Open to a playoff. So congrats to Steven Yeager. You're the only man on earth who can beat Scottie Scheffler. I mean, what do we say about Scottie Scheffler that hasn't already been said?
Nothing. I think it just speaks to just the level of golf he's playing compared to everybody else. You know, I think there's a ton of really good players on the PGA Tour that just, it doesn't seem like a fair fight right now. And I don't know about you, man. It just seems to me like the only thing that could stop Scottie Scheffler right now is having a baby. And like that, we've already discussed all this before, but I mean, what an incredible run that he's been on. It's been so fun to watch, and just the venues that he's won at, right? You know, I think you were sounding kind of an alarm on the West Coast talking about his putting, and just you had hit the eject button. And even after Phoenix, in which he played really well and missed a couple of those three footers down the stretch, but I also was telling you that it was more mental mistakes it felt like on that day than anything, and doesn't win in Phoenix, you're like, oh my gosh, Scottie's never gonna, he's gonna be the best player of all time to not win golf tournaments. And then he said, hold on, hold the phone, I'm gonna go tear the world apart. And that's what he's done. He's won on just such different venues, right? I mean, when you think about where he's won, where did this even start? Where was the first one? Bay Hill.
API, yeah.
So yeah. Bay Hill, you got to drive it so good, and you obviously got to be able to hit it high with really firm greens. So that's, to me, is a pretty good recipe for Scottie Scheffler. He's played well in the past there. But the players is like, you just got to get up there and play golf, and it doesn't favor anybody. You just have to be able to hit the shots, and Scottie can hit the shots, obviously. And then Augusta, well, Houston, really, he didn't even have his best stuff at Houston and still should have won. And that's the crazy thing. But then Masters, obviously, and then playing in tons of wind. And then Hilton had such a different challenge with, you know, hitting three irons and stuff off the tee. So just incredible, man.
This is a tweet from you sent over from Sean Martin of the PGA Tour, who lists his last four wins, the API, the Players, the Masters, the RBC Heritage, and says, a major, the tour's flagship event, and two longtime invitationals held on four disparate venues that ask different questions. No one had won at all four in their career until Scottie just did so in a span of 44 days. So, I mean, that really kind of puts it into perspective. To your point on sounding the alarm bells, yes, I did hand up. I sounded some alarm bells, but I think it's well within my rights here to say, as a putter tinkerer, nothing made me happier than seeing him make a midseason putter change, go into that spider, and the rest is history. I mean, obviously we pointed to Rory saying, hey, maybe he should go to the spider, and probably wishing he never uttered that on the broadcast of the Genesis, because
I mean,
since then I was sitting next to my wife and my father-in-law yesterday, and you know, casual golf fans like, you know, hear me talk about it, but like, what changed? Like, what's different? And it's like, well, actually last year, Scottie probably was hitting it even better. I mean, he was hitting it at a level that we haven't seen since prime Tiger Woods. And this year he's still hitting it great. But, you know, what's changed is like he just made a putter change, you know, about a month and a half ago. And now he's putting, you know, great to, you know, above average to great week in, week out. And that's enough to win golf tournaments. And I think pretty consistently we said that if you could just figure that piece out, like he should win by multiple shots. And
just positive, right?
Like just positive.
Just positive. Yeah. I think it speaks a lot, Charlie, too. You know, when guys are working on things like Phil Kenyon and him were, I think you're working to, you know, to become better a month from now, like just because you're not seeing the results instantly. I think that to me was what they've done such a good job of is putting the work in and then realizing that, hey, this might not happen tomorrow, but it's good. Eventually this process of how we train and how we, you know, read putts and how we execute our game plan on the greens, to me, that was solidified. And I probably, the Hero World Challenge was the first time you're like, okay, this looks like somebody that can be a dominant player in the game. And then we get to the West Coast, and I think it had everything to do with the Poana greens, mm-hmm. because I don't think he putts those greens quite as well. So, you know, just kind of stuck with this process, kind of got in the MX, which is a shootout. But then the other events, you know, once he got to the Florida coast, I was like, just wait, Charlie, it's coming. And the makes the putter change. And then it was game over.
Yeah. I mean, I two of those are Bermuda, right? API and Players are Bermuda. Masters, of course, is Bent. I'm actually not sure what Harbour Town is, whether that's a Bermuda, or I know that like Key was Paspalum. So I'm not sure
it's not Paspalum. It's
Bermuda.
It's Bermuda. But
yeah,
I'm I'm not sure if there was any oversee to it, like an overseeded Poe. Poa trivialis, I think, is what you typically see. But they looked really brown to me, watched on TV. So, and part of my brain remembers that the Bermuda, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Regardless, it's nothing like a past palom, though, like you're talking about.
I say there are like two moments that, I mean, again, we're trying to find new things to say about Scotty. And so for me, it's more about watching these tournaments and trying to find like these moments you can isolate that illustrate how great he is. And I thought yesterday, on Sunday night, is the last hole he's playing, the 15th hole, hits his drive middle of the fairway. And then the biggest announcer jinx of all time, they throw up a graphic. Oh, Scotty has had 53 consecutive holes scoring a four or better. And of course, walks up, gets a mud ball, hits a four iron into the water, you know, kind of right to left shot. And then as he's walking up, I say, it's so uncharacteristic for Scotty. He usually, you know, likes to work the ball left to right. And you know, this is not sure what happened there. And then of course he's standing over and it's like, oh, you know, he's going to have to hit another right to left shot here, you know, which is not necessarily the shot shape he likes to see. And what's he do? Just draws a 130 yard pitching wedge over a tree and spins it down to about 11 feet. And then with the video scoreboard behind him cycling through a set of lights as the lights dimming and Sepp Straka's opting not to play, just drains an 11 footer to make a par. I mean, I just, at this point, it's amazing. It's like, I think that's the thing that's most impressive is, you know, even his ball striking is amazing, but it's like, even when he doesn't have those things, he's always finding a way to shoot a score week in, week out. And that's, you know, that hole just encapsulated it for me. It's like, he's not going to lose shots to the field where, you know, earlier in that round on Sunday, there was a sort of a sliding doors moment where Wyndham Clark had got off to this super hot start. I think he's opened birdie, eagle, birdie, and shot 29 on the front. And there was kind of a moment on TV where they're showing multiple different players in the hunt, and Scotty's making a birdie on five green right after Wyndham's sort of botching a punch, you know, a punch out on 12. And Patrick Rogers is over here in the front in the hunt, and he botches a flop shot on seven. And so I think I'm just curious your thoughts on just the mechanics of chasing a player that's playing at this level. Like if you're in that sort of hunting pack, you know, the unforced errors that it causes and the way that changes the way you think about a round, like, you know, what kind of goes into that when you're looking at a guy like Scotty and you're like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here.
You know, it's got to feel like you're playing against perfection. And if you make a mistake, that it's over. And I think that's how a lot of probably people felt when they were playing against Tiger Woods. And that's just where we're at in this run with Scotty. You know, he'll eventually come back down a little bit. You can't sustain this level of golf forever. But as we are right now, you better bring your A++ game to take down Scotty. And let me ask you this too about Scotty and just where we're at in kind of the grander picture of golf on television and Scotty's, you know, what we've dreamed of having, being a dominant player since Tiger Woods. And it seems like there's still question marks, whether it's a bigger, biggest needle mover. Like is Scotty a needle mover at all for you? Like, do you think that the game, like, can you compare him to any other athlete in any other sport that he reminds you of? It's like, he's really good, but like also nobody's really turning on the TV quite as much as, for instance, like a Jordan Spieth, who's like electric when he wins.
I think there are a lot of layers to answering this question. I was thinking about this a lot yesterday. Also Nelly Korda, who, you know, right, we also need to mention, who is maybe playing at even higher level than Scotty Scheffler somehow. Yeah. She has won in five straight starts, which is unbelievable. And it does that sort of a thing cater to a fan who, are you turning it on because you want to see competition or do you want to see greatness? And so I think that's the first part of that question. And I think largely for casuals, you know, you don't want to miss out on greatness. You know, you don't want to miss out on a LeBron coming into his, you know, coming into stardom after, you know, coming up short all those early years of the Cavaliers. And like, now you're kind of like, you're breaking through. It's like, you don't want to miss out on that. You want to be able to say that you witnessed history, you saw it happen. Or I think a lot of, like, you know, growing up in Central California as a Warriors fan, and watching those early Steph Curry teams, you know, where they're moving from like winning, you know, 26 games a year with Steph and Monte Ellis chucking up a million shots to like drafting the right guys, and a switch flips and you're like, oh my goodness, this is, and that's what I kind of feel like the last couple of weeks with Scottie have been. It's like, he's found all the pieces and put them together. And now I want to be here to witness this thing that's happening that is, you know, doesn't happen very often. You know, it's sort of, you know, once in a generation type thing. That's one piece of it. I think there's also like a, do you like a Scottie Scheffler type person, like a yes or no type question? Cause I've seen a lot of from the live quarters of the internet, particularly saying he doesn't have what it takes to be a superstar. And I'm not saying that they're wrong in terms of what their tastes are. What do you like or what do you not like in terms of a person you want to root for or a person you find to be marketable or a superstar? That may not check those boxes for them. I know for me and maybe for us on this pod, I love seeing a really good human being, a nice guy who treats everybody well, and a guy who's on the verge of becoming a father, like win every single week. Like that's right in my demo. So, I mean, for me particularly, it's like, yeah, like of course I'm going to root for Scottie Scheffler. Now, like, I don't know how all encompassing that is, but I think, I mean, shoot, in a day and age where positive news and positive storylines are hard to come by, you got to think that there are a lot of, you know, parents or kids who are out there like, look at this guy. He's a really good, wholesome role model. And he's also an absolute assassin on the golf course. Like he's just amazing. Then I think the third thing is converting to, you know, revenue via traditional television business models, you know, and or whatever is coming next. Like I saw a lot of people kind of rebutting the numbers we saw for the Masters television ratings last week with like, can we see the numbers for the app? Because I think that there were additional millions of people consuming it that way. So like, I don't, you know, that's why I say it's layered. It's which one of those things do you approach first? Like, I think it's fair to say across the board that interest in golf is kind of declined a little bit for a lot of different reasons. But I do wonder there if the full picture is being painted. And I think ultimately a run like this should bring more people to the game because they don't want to miss out on watching greatness than pushing people away because they're bored by it or they don't connect or relate to Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, no, I think those are all great points, and where it leads me, and I think when you have a dominant player like this, and I'll look at different sports, I think of tennis, and I think of Roger Federer, and I think of Rafael Nadal, or even just in our sport with Tiger Woods, and just how those players have been marketed across the world, and the types of brands that they're associated with. Right now, to me, Scottie is just what he's really good at is playing golf and winning golf tournaments and being great. But also, I think the visibility side from Scottie is on a very low level for the number one player in the world. Like you don't see him on the TV all the time in commercials and doing all these shoots. Like he's just fine being the number one player in the world and not being famous. And I think there's guys like, you just think of the brand of Roger Federer and all the things that he would do off the golf course to enhance his image and his brand. I don't know if it's Scottie, because like right now all I see him on is the fitness champ or the fitness exercise thing, the Live
Golf Forever.
Golf Forever. Like he should be in the Rolex, all these like commercials that you watch and you're just thinking, man, I can't wait to watch him on Sunday and try to win again. Like that to me is what Scottie doesn't necessarily bring to the table from a marketing standpoint. And maybe he doesn't want to do it. That's fine. But I'm also at the same point, like Nike should be running some like big time ads on this guy. That's just the thing that's missing to me. It's just what we have consumed as a fan from the other great athletes across different sports. And I just don't think we've seen that yet with Scottie besides a workout thing. And it doesn't necessarily make anybody excited to go turn on the TV and watch him, even though we know how good he is.
Yeah, it's almost like what you're drilling down on there is it's a personality based thing and people can really only be who they are. And I think the most, you know, two of the most interesting pieces of personality-based content that I've seen via Scottie Scheffler in the last couple of years have been, one is I think Claire Rogers was sharing resharing this photo on the internet again yesterday, because it was so hilarious. It's like that still frame from the Christmas TaylorMade shoot with Scottie Scheffler next to Nelly Korda. It's like, this is one of the only pictures we have of the two greatest players in the world right now together. And they're wearing elf costumes. And the other was that conversation he had with Tiger, also a TaylorMade video about taking divots. And it's like, those are the two, like, you know, the pieces, the lens we're getting into his personality. Like, those are some of the only times we've gotten it. It also, you know, the Golf Forever workout deal as well. But I agree with you. It's just like, what parts of his personality are you tapping into to make him a human being, to make him relatable to people, or to make him seem bulletproof to people, however you're going to market him, so that there's like more interest than this guy just hits it where he's looking every single time and that's it. And you know what, where that my head goes on that too, is like, your buddy Ricky has done a great job of that, especially now as he's, you know, as a father as well, you know, and he's got family considerations, yet at the same time, he does these things that help you kind of get this feel for like, Ricky's got a good sense of humor about him, and he's got a cool factor about him. I'd be interested to know who on Scottie's team, you know, is working on developing those things or trying to tap into those things and what they are, or if it's a conversation they keep bringing up and he's like, dude, I just
want to do this. $16 million in 44 days. He doesn't need to do anything, but I'm just telling you from just the way I look at it in the lens of comparing him to Tiger Woods and how he was marketed and branded, it's not even close. And I'm not trying to compare the two, but statistically you can compare what Tiger, you know, at his best statistically, and what Scottie's done over the last however many weeks, you can look at the numbers, be like, yeah, like that ball striking is comparable. And I just think about too, like that commercial with Tiger when he walks across the water and hits the shot.
Yes.
Like that to me is like something that Scottie, I think, would be hilarious. And I don't know. I just maybe I'm a little off on that, but I think there is something a little to that too. When we talk about just where we're at with some of our best players on the PGA Tour that just don't care about being famous. They're like, well, we're making a ton of money, we don't have to do this.
I'll be curious to see if he gets pushed in that direction. Like would he ever get asked to host Saturday Night Live? You know, like, could you bring his sense of humor out there? Could you? I know everyone's got their own level of comfort with how much they want to share, you know, related to their family and their children. But like, could somebody come in with a really good pitch of like, hey, we're just going to paint you as the wholesome everyman dad who just like, you know, wears the glasses like Clark Kent and then just goes out there on the weekend, turns into Superman. Can we market that? Cause I think there's a demo for that. Like, I think there's interest in that. It's just, how do you get that right in a way that feels authentic to Scottie and a way that feels authentic to whatever audience segment you're trying to go after. But it's, you know, to kind of, this, you sent over some screenshots of this. It's a couple of stats that are just mind blowing. Where this is from Kyle Porter with CBS, who is tweeting about the highest earnings in a single season in PGA Tour history, his official money. It's Scottie Scheffler in 2023, who earned $21 million. It's John Rahm in 2023, who earned $16.5 million. And it's next is Scottie Scheffler in the last 42 days, $16.3 million. Then here's another great one. Presuming, this is also from Kyle Porter, presuming a 5-7-10 percentage caddy player structure for Scottie and a win, here are some interesting 2024 PGA Tour earnings. Rory McIlroy, $1.71 million. Ted Scott, $1.78 million. I mean, it's just handpick a stat. It's just going to sound more absurd than the last one you read. It's just, it's unreal.
it's insane, man.
Yeah, I don't know what much more there is to be said.
I definitely think you mentioned Nelly Korda. I mean, I've been only able to consume so much when it comes to watching golf. So I'm not here to be able to comment that I've seen every shot that Nelly's hit over the last 5 weeks. But acknowledging how hard it is to win just 1 week and doing it 2 weeks in a row and then 3 weeks. I can't imagine what Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda, what they've been able to mentally been able to overcome and also be able to stay sharp one shot at a time and just keep their foot on the pedal. I just think that it's so difficult because it's to win back to back, because it takes so much out of you to win one. And then doing that 5 weeks in a row, and I'm lumping Scotty in there because he was in the hunt, had a putt to win basically 5 weeks in a row too. So what just, I mean, just remarkable that we have two golfers in the men's and the women's game right now that have the talent, the ability, the work ethic, and really likable human beings as well. Love, I mean, how do you not root for Scotty and Nelly?
I think it's so interesting comparing the two of them because I'm trying to embrace my future girl dad era. I'm trying to consume more LPGA. I don't want my baby girl to get, you know, left behind in the AJGA rankings behind Anna Carter. You know, she's racing up the rankings. So I really got to make sure I'm ready to help my girl consume, you know, the elite women's players. So, I watched a lot of the Chevron Championship this weekend. And I think it's so interesting, you know, looking at the two of them saying what's different and what's the same. And Scotty has this like completely home cooked, all over the place swing, feet sliding around, you know, but just, you know, hits it exactly where he's looking every single time. What's that?
Just about the feet thing. I'm just letting you know, I've played two times in a row now and I've been doing the feet thing.
Okay. let's go in that direction. So tell me what it means to you. What does doing the feet thing mean to you, Smiley?
It's how you push into the ground. So it's what it's helping me do. And maybe this is just a Band-Aid for right now. And but
I need video.
And I feel like I'm sliding my foot this way. Okay. And I'm pushing my left foot to you. So, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's the way I'm pushing into the ground. And I think one of the big things in that with my golf swing that would cause me to get stuck, I would put too much pressure into my right toe in the downswing.
Okay. Back foot. So, all right. Yep.
What it's helping me do is actually it's helping me not stall out, because if I put too much pressure in my right foot in the downswing, it causes my left shoulder or to get too much side bend too early in my swing to where then I just get stuck and then I just drag the handle and then hit a hi-ya. So
the classic Smiley hi-ya.
Yeah. Drove it really well. 3 or 4 wow. days ago, hit just about every fairway, but then didn't hit quite as good a couple days ago, but all good. We're going to still roll with the Scotty foot thing.
I need maybe I'll give this a shot next because although we played a tournament, our season opener tournament this weekend at Hope Valley, and I had a blast, by the way. We were in the hunt, but I mean, I could not buy a putt to save my life. Like, I think I made like 17 total inches of putts on the day. hit it as good as I could possibly hit it. Like, just could not miss a fairway. Driver is, you know, A+ right now, but could not putt. Little loose with the wedge game. So maybe I'm working on different things, but I do like the idea of that kind of that weight transfer of not getting stuck. I need to see video. I'm dying to see you doing the Scotty Shuffle. To return to the Nelly and Scotty comparison.
That was on my brain.
No, that's good. I'm glad.
Because I know I'm not the only person that was trying that on the range. It's like, what is he doing?
What's he doing?
It's how he pushes and uses the ground. And it's actually what it is. It's, you know how teachers talk about like don't hump the golf ball, like so don't move your pelvis into it.
I've been a golf ball humper.
Scotty is an anti-humper. The anti-hump. The move that he does with his feet is the anti-hump. So
wow.
how you're trying to get your pelvis to not move towards the ball. Right. His is the what he does with his feet and the way he moves his hips. It's it helps him not to it helps him to not hit the ball left, but what he's really doing, it's brilliant. To be honest, it's a little crazy at times and sometimes it's a little bit too much, but it's so unique, but it's such a cool way to use the ground. And he does it so great. I think it's nobody teaches anything like it, but they teach it, but it's a much more functional. His is like a total over the end of the cliff way to do it. But it's, I think it's the right way to use your feet.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we got Zura Classic this week, a little bit of a lighter week. I'm smelling a little swing notes segment coming up on the next set.
Perfect.
A little side by side of you and Scotty, because this is really interesting stuff. And
I'll
think it's like
a report after in a couple of days where I'm at.
That's right. I'm very much looking forward to that report. So to return finally to the Scotty Nelly comparisons, I think that we've covered Scotty's sort of home cook swing, and Nelly has the swing that is, there's not a single, you know, tiny bit of wasted motion in that swing. It's just so clean, so perfect, so repeatable. Really, it's like swing goals for anyone who's trying to, you know, figure out how to learn how to swing a golf club, how to perfect their action. It's, you know, it's amazing. You can watch it a million times on repeat, but very different swings. The thing that I heard from both of them this week that I thought was really interesting is just talking about mindset stuff and how much of that is similar. And just, you know, Nelly talking about simplifying the process of thinking about the way she plays the game. And that sometimes, this is her winner's interview after the Chevron, just saying, like, sometimes we make golf a little bit too complicated. And it's really just sort of a simple game, a simple set of checklists, and just, you know, kind of going out there. And I think for Scotty too, he mentioned just, I think this was the interview with Amanda Baliones this morning, where he's just talking about, hey, you know, it's my mindset's been really, really good the last month or so. And of course that could be a product of all of a sudden I'm putting it good and that feels better and it's easier to be positive. But nonetheless, I think just the two of them just being in a really, really good mental place, you know, having the talent to be the best players in the world, but just when you know, golf is a mental game. And when you get in a good place mentally, the results are going to bear themselves out. And that's what we're seeing with both of them.
Yeah. And you heard Scotty say it too, this morning, talking to Amanda.
Yeah.
And like, what have you been doing so well? Like, how do you describe it? And he just says, I've been doing such a good job mentally. And that's, I've already kind of mentioned that, how impressive it is to have just the processes to be able to like not overreact to everything. And when you have to keep momentum in a round, they've been able to make the putts. And at least from me watching Scotty, you know, I think it started on the first hole in the tournament yesterday. Hits a perfect wedge shot to a green that was rock hard, chips it to 5.5, 6 feet. And I'm sitting here watching thinking he's going to miss this and he's not going to win today. Buries it right in the middle. Hits it over the green on 2, chips in for eagle. And you're just like, all right, it's over. Just like that, I went from Scotty's going to lose the golf tournament because he missed this 5-footer for par, chips in for eagle at 2, the whole thing's over.
I mean, and here we are talking about Scotty's branding and marketability, and we've just completely spaced on the fact that like, he hit us with his version of the Jordan shrug on 2 there. Just turned his head, Scott, and I don't know.
Dude, how good is his chipping, man? Like, that is – We talk about his ball striking, but my goodness, how he can chip lately. It's been remarkable, the amount of hole outs that he's had, but getting out of trouble and just never really hitting a bad chip. I think that's the thing that I've noticed the most is that when he pitches it, he leads it in the proper areas, like it's below the hole. He doesn't ram one by, doesn't come up way short. His touch is just impeccable around the greens.
The worst, well, I shouldn't say the worst chip. The second to worst chip he hit all week, or second to worst wedge shot around the green he hit all week was today on 18, where he left himself like a long par putt. But he had 4 shots to play, which was fine. The worst, I think you'd probably say, was the shank he hit on the 3rd hole of the tournament and then eventually made double. That he'd probably say that was the worst one. But
yeah, I didn't see it. Sorry. I was traveling that day.
neither did I. And it obviously it didn't matter in the long run. That's another one where I'd love to kind of dig in on his motion, because it seems to me like he hits a lot of those sort of, you know, bump and run chips really well. And similar to his full swing, gets steep on it a lot when he's chipping, yeah. But just does it in such a repeatable way. And his own sort of, you know, it's amazing. I mean, to your point, like he just doesn't hit bad chips. And he's got such a good feel for where he needs to land it, to use the slope. It's unbelievable.
His, what he does so well in his golf swing and I would say his pitching, is that he keeps his height really well. Like his golf swing, like there's no like going down. He stays like his head height stays the same, but his pitching really good pitchers of the ball get taller in their downswing, like their head moves up, and Scotty does that better than anybody. Like he makes so much room for his arms in the pitching. But he also really is so good about how he uses the leading edge. He's not somebody that uses the back of the wedge. He's somebody that just somehow just gets, he makes perfect contact because that angle of attack is a little steeper. Similar to like how Jordan pitches, just like really on top of it and cover fades, just a lot of cut shots. But he also can hit those little run and hook shots too really well. So he's got all the shots, and how he sets up to his pitching is really interesting to me as well. Like it's very like wide almost. Like it's, he doesn't keep his feet together pitching, which I tend to like, but it encourages good body motion. But because he gets tall, he transfers his weight really well in his pitching, getting to his front foot and just being able to turn and post, and just such good touch and great technique and great form.
Yeah, it's just, you say that about almost any part of his game at this point. But I mean, we're 30 plus minutes into the show, and rightfully discuss almost all Scotty, and we'll continue to do so.
Just think about this. I mean, we don't have Scotty until it'll be the Wells Fargo. So getting in all this about Scotty, because the next couple of weeks we'll have different topics of things to get into. But I think we're kind of a little bit onto something on, let's see what happens with Scotty with having a child, which couldn't be more happy for him to become a dad. He's going to kill the dad life. And also just maybe over the next year, what are we going to see from him from a marketing brand side? Is Nike going to lean in, and are you going to start to see some Tiger like commercials with Nike and him? I think the answer should be yes there.
The last tweet that I'm going to reference that you sent over from at it is Mark Harris on Twitter. It's a Kyle Porter repost. Was, don't worry, Scotty Scheffler is going to be humbled soon. The dad bed in the delivery room doesn't care if you have two green jackets or earned over $50 million in 4 months. It takes no prisoners.
I had
PTSD just looking at that. I mean, the good people at Duke University Hospital did a great job in delivering my first child, but good Lord, they put me in the smallest and most uncomfortable room with a terrible chair. And I'm just going to sign up and do it all over again in October. So,
well, here's the, like, just think about your wife carried your child for 9 months.
Yeah.
And we have 3 days of what seems like our own mini hell and on a lounge chair. Can you compare and say like equal things here in this? Debatable.
I was going to say, I like where you're going with it. And I could get on board. I might be like a quieter voice in the background, ready to kind of back out of the room at any moment in time, but I'll go in the room with you. I think this is a real tangent, but I'd like, you know how it goes where, you know, the baby's getting up a ton in the middle of the night, so you're not really sleeping. And so there are a couple nights where I think I found this random like golf video game. It basically looked like the old Pokemon Game Boy games graphics for a golf game. And I'm like laying down, like, what am I doing here? Like, I could be getting like 17 minutes of sleep, and instead I'm playing like a knockoff version of the Masters on a golf video game on my phone, just that's waiting just for you, my son to start. Yeah, sicko.
That's just you, man. You're
sicko.
Don't you want me into that?
I looking forward to doing it again, and looking forward to seeing how that changes Scotty Meredith's life. It's gonna be amazing. Happy for him, and maybe it'll make for more interesting conclusion to the rest of the season. Three names, really. You know, we can talk about, of course, others in the field that pique your interest, but there are three for me that I felt like or guys we've been keeping an eye on, we've been talking about this week, but also kind of playing it forward to other majors. Your hands up. I'm going to call on you now. What would
before
you like to say?
Before you change topics, I just assumed that he would be playing Wells Fargo.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Do you think we'll even
you
see
think
him
so? More? Well, I think this might have been Jim Nance or Trevor Immelman who said it on the broadcast today. Like, we probably see him at Wells Fargo because I think that's the last start for PGA. But I'm with you. Like, I don't – because the schedule until then – I'll quickly try to pull this up.
I would not be surprised.
Peace went straight to the major?
if we just see him at the PGA.
Why not? I mean, I don't.
He just got nothing that he needs to do at Wells Fargo. I mean, he's got a 2,000 point lead in the FedEx.
Well, it's. I mean, the thing about that is, it's like, hey, well, maybe you need to tune up for a major. Like, buddy, he just won the Masters, went home to take fireball shots at a dive bar in Dallas, showed up with no prep, and won a signature event. Like, I think he's good on prep. I don't think he needs any more prep.
I just, before we change topics, I just wanted to say that I wouldn't be surprised after they have their child where he's just like, I can't do Wells Fargo. And just says, I'll see you at the PGA.
It's going to kill him to miss the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson at TPC Craig Ranch. Another storied vendor you could add to the list of, you know, Bay Hill, Sawgrass, Augusta, Harbor Town, TPC Craig Ranch. It's a real shame. I think that's fair. I think that's fair. And look, if anyone can do it, it's him. I think you could just roll up and maybe just hit some balls and see how that would be amazing. That'll actually be really interesting to see how that changes his odds. You know, if odds makers think that lowers him a little bit. I mean, because then you could get a really good value play on Scotty that week.
You're not getting any value on Scotty right now. I don't care if he has 7 babies in the next 3 weeks.
he has, and this is not meant to be a drive-by at Sam Burns. It's just a testament to you know how good Scotty's been. This is another screenshot he sent over. Is that his odds to complete the Grand Slam this year are the same as Sam Burns to win the PGA? Sam Burns is an amazing top 20 in the world player. It's just that's just how good he's been. So we could do Scotty stats all show long. We'll probably keep doing even while he's not playing as well.
That's all I got, by the way. No more hand raises. It was nice to be able to do this, you and I, in person, to where we just were able to kind of like cut in. And it, like with this, it's so much more difficult. I feel like I need to like raise my hand to like cut in.
I'll say I'm missing the in-person vibe. That was a fun week in Augusta, being able to do more of that. I think it's a fun show. And hey, look, the goal is to do more of that in the future. So three guys I just want to kind of hit you up on to get, you know, like just a kind of a temp check on where we are with each of them. Wyndham Clark, Colin Morikawa, and Ludvig Åberg. So I just want to start with Wyndham. He finished T3. As we kind of mentioned earlier in the show, starts his fourth round, birdie, eagle, birdie, shoots 29 on the front, then has that unfortunate kind of mishap, punch out on 12, doubles 12, bogeys 13 and 15. At that point, he's effectively out of the running. He got better. I mean, he shot 72, 66, 68, 68. So, you know, improved going into the weekend, had a great round on Friday. You know, he's been the guy, it feels like. I mean, he and Ludvig in the Masters, but he's been really the guy this season who feels like he's the closest to Scotty. And kind of going forward in the next, you know, series of events, I mean, Wells Fargo, he's the defending champ there. If Scotty's not in the field, he'd be the presumptive favorite, I should think. Where are we at on just what we saw with him, his ability to kind of heat up quickly? But, you know, kind of going back to what we were talking about with Scotty originally of like, do you think some of those mistakes on the back are less to do with his game and more to do with, I got to do something and try to make up this ground to beat Scotty Scheffler?
You know, when you start that far back and you make a run, it's, you weren't expecting to be in the hunt and have a chance to win. And then you start pushing a little bit. Cause then, or just one bad swing out there too at Hilton Head can get you in trouble. But just, you know, getting off to a start like that on Sunday and not knowing if Scotty was going to show up and shoot an even par or one over and have a chance, you kind of feel like you got to press a little bit. But I think I'm just going to more speak about just Wyndham and the type of dog that he is, man. He just, going back to Wells Fargo, like he said, winning last year. I mean, just looking at his results, just like what he's done in the big time events, he's the big game Brooks Koepka hunter that has tried to replace Brooks. I mean, any big event, he's there, winning the US Open. And I even go to like the Tour Championship, the 72 hole scoring. He was third last year. So there's another big event. Pebble Beach, he won. So it's another signature event. Second at Bay Hill, Players Championship, second. I mean, dude, these are like what event am I missing here? Right. Like these are our biggest events. And I just mentioned his results there. I mean, goodness gracious, this guy's right. If Scotty wasn't having the season that he was having, we would be talking about just is Wyndham the next like great player, but he's just being overshadowed by somebody that's doing something that that hasn't been done. It's the largest. Like Jim Nance mentioned this on doing the FedEx Cup summary at the end, because he has a 2,300 point lead. It's the biggest lead in the FedEx Cup era with 16 events left, breaking his own mark back in 2022. So it's just, we weren't going to do any Scotty stuff, but here I am. but
I can't help it.
But let's, I'll kind of turn it to Wyndham and that he is second in the points list right now. And I think he's a player that has no problem challenging Scotty at one of these next majors, and would not be surprised at all if he was able to pick off a major this year.
This is a little bit jumping ahead in the show. We're going to come back to one and done, but in calculating, we had a little bit of a cool off week here for our one and done picks. But
what do you mean a cool off week, man? Like I think the
we made the cut. in a no cut event.
I think the fish in the intercoastal over here could have picked a better week than us, man.
Hey, but nonetheless, if you and I were both players in the FedEx Cup standings right now, it would be Scotty, me, Wyndham, you. So still having a pretty good season with 9 starts. I think, you know, and this is another, I know we keep trying to turn away from Scotty. I forget who posted this. I think it was on Twitter yesterday, where it was just a screenshot of the leaderboard without Scotty. And it was like, man, this would be such an exciting finish today if this was, you know, if Wyndham was leading, or if, you know, this was kind of the mix right now. And it's true. It's like there is a lot of really good golf being played out there. It's just that it's kind of getting lost in Scotty's shadow. But I think Wyndham is a guy who, you love him at Valhalla. He's shown up in every one of these big events. Like if he goes to Wells Fargo and has a great week, maybe even defends and rolls that into the PGA. I mean, yeah, Scotty will be the favorite for good reason, but I mean, he's a guy that could, I mean, we saw it in the start to that round on Sunday. It's like when he gets hot, he gets hot. He can post a low number, and you know, it's not as good as Scotty's been. There are guys that can go out and win it. It's whether or not they can, you know, minimize some of the mistakes that Scotty's so good at, just shooting a score no matter what, no matter, you know, even when he makes mistakes, kind of being able to recover. You know, you saw that with Wyndham with that punch out on 12. It's just he makes a double that kind of takes you out of it. So, so going from Wyndham to Colin, another guy who entering the week, you said, do you think Colin's going to have a good week this week? And we had a little bit of a discussion about that. He putted it pretty good this week, finished 13th in strokes gained putting, was negative on Sunday, but Thursday and Friday had really good days on the greens, and Saturday was another solid performance. Finishes solo ninth, 13 under, shoots 65, 66, 68, and then 72. This is a guy that I just feel like, you know, even though the approach numbers weren't great this week, I think it's something Trevor Immelman said at the end of the show or end of the broadcast today, where it looks like he's really close to putting it all together and kind of figuring it out. You know, combination of just the ball striking stuff that he has been so good at, but has been trying to figure out, plus the putting. Where are you at on Colin Morikawa and like whether or not he could really kind of pop, you know, the second half of the season?
Yeah, he had such a, you know, a really nice fall. You know, we were so looking forward to seeing what Colin was going to bring this year. And splitting up with Mark Blackburn, just talking to him a little bit of just about who Colin is. And I think Colin's just trying to hit a fade. And we all know, like, when you – it's just like Chris Kirk. He wants to hit a draw. And Colin has been – struggling a little bit with just his back, I think was like last year. So goes and sees Mark, and they're working on just the making the physical changes to properly hit a fade to where his back isn't going to be stressed. In which his move, like when you watch it, his has definitely more of the leg kick pelvis towards the ball, like opposite of Scotty, which is much more of a push draw move than it is a fade move. So you have to – like they tried to kind of fix those things, and then the problem that Colin was having is that he was hitting it too straight, and he like wasn't able to like take spin off of shots and hit like these field fades that he was so good at. But just getting inside of Mark's head, just of the what makes Collins so good, he just said his mental game is just insane. There's a reason why he's a multiple time major winner. And I think that's why, like, when I was so down on him heading into the Masters, and just why I just didn't think he would, you know, show up, I guess, on the weekend, it's because I just, when guys are making changes like that and are a little lost in their golf swing, for most people, it leads to missed cuts and bad play. And I think the one thing I didn't factor in was his mental game and why he is who he is. And Colin is probably has one of the sharper minds out on the PGA Tour, just tons of self-belief and being able to play one shot at a time. Nobody can really do it better than Colin when he's on, right? And we've seen that in his early part of his career. So, I think it's still going to be a bit of a work in progress. Just seeing that, looking at his data golf results, just a lot of green of the recent, but still work to be done for sure, though.
I think, and it's interesting because where my head goes when you say that is kind of back to where we started with Scotty, where some of these process changes could pay dividends, just not going to happen right away. And so, you know, maybe kind of starting to see some of those signs while he's still making mistakes that are kind of taking him out of contention at tournaments, you know, like we saw at Augusta, you know, like we kind of saw a little bit this week, that, you know, he's getting close, but it's just going to take a little bit of extra time for that to bed in. And when it does, you can really kind of see those things click and start and kind of get some results in those tournaments. So one to definitely keep tabs on. And then last one I wanted to hit on was Ludvig. I mean, good God, I can't imagine a more brutal place to begin that Sunday restart with a bunch of rain on the course. The temperatures drop like crazy. It's cold. And it's like, hey, here you go. Teed up on 14. It's 192 yard force carry over water, par three. Good luck to you. And he hit a 5-iron 170 yards into the water, and then has crazy, to of course, right? Come back and doubles 18 to fall from what would have been T5 to T10. You know, I think, you know, still respectable, a top 10 finish coming off, you know, the Masters, and a guy who I still love at the PGA. And he started, I mean, 66, 66, 68, 72. I mean, I just think he's entering that same sort of, you know, the picture you're painting for Wyndham, where the guy just plays good every single time he shows up at a big event. I think that's kind of where we're getting with him. And the experience thing is going to come with time, but like nobody better to have on your bag than Joe Skovran to kind of help you accelerate that process. And this, to me, felt like another kind of box checked in that direction this week.
And just kind of a reminder that Victor didn't play this week. Just a reminder. Like, so crazy to me still. Maybe there's an injury in there somewhere that we don't know about. But just this, I mean, we have to just bring it up again. Like, him not even being there this week is just crazy, right? But to Ludvig's point, I mean, I think people forget that he would have had a chance to win at Pebble if it weren't for the Saturday restart. And really, maybe would have changed his strategy down the stretch on Saturday if he knew that, hey, the tournament's ending, and maybe he would have taken one more risk here or there to see if, you know, if he would have been the guy to potentially win that tournament. But dominating at the RSM Classic, I was there for that. Top 10 at the Players, you know, second at he's played really, really some really solid golf in some of our biggest events, similar to Wyndham. So I'm all aboard with you there.
The Vic thing, to quickly go back to that one, I mean, there definitely could be an injury, but that one feels a lot like Rory last year, you know, the miscut, the Masters, and then the withdraw, even though he didn't have any more WDs left for the, what was then the designated event deal, you know, where he just kind of pulls out the next week. And I think Victor, just looking at his facial expression coming down the stretch when he missed the cut at the Masters, it's just like, get me out of here. I don't want to play golf for a long time. And then Rory, we next saw Rory at the Wells Fargo. And you got to assume we're not going to see Vic at Zurich this week. You know, I don't think we'll see him at TPC Craig Ranch. Who knows? So then that the next option is just one more event before the PGA Championship. So that'll be an interesting one. I mean, we both want to see him come back and play well, but I just don't know what's going to get him back there right now, unless it's just going to spend time with Dana Dahlquist, who looks like he's working with now, and just kind of grinding out whatever it is they need to do to get him in shape for a major.
Yeah, I think he needs to play golf, but that's just me. Just go play.
Yeah, yeah. A fair point indeed. So that kind of concludes just our RBC Heritage discussion here. We touched a little bit on Nelly, you know, her sort of brilliance. It felt like it was a busy weekend in golf because we had Nelly winning her fifth in a row. We had Scotty winning his fourth and five starts. We had Billy Horschel winning an opposite field event, which was cool to kind of see him go down there and embrace that. And then we had Miles Russell making history, 15 years old, 2 days after becoming the youngest player ever to make the cut on the Corn Ferry Tour. He became the youngest player since at least 1983 to finish in the top 25 in a Corn Ferry Tour or PGA Tour event. Super, super cool stuff. He's a little lefty. He got a really smooth move on him. He's a known quantity to you, Smiley. You covered Miles as a 13-year-old. Do I have this right? At Bandon Dunes. So what's your kind of report on Miles?
Well, I think one of my favorite things I've done in TV is being a part of the junior game and the amateur game. So being at a couple U.S. juniors, being at a couple U.S. amateurs, getting to meet like our future stars in the game at an earlier age, to me has been really fun to kind of build relationships with these players. And I was out at Bandon Dunes in my first Golf Channel week covering the U.S. junior out there. And I was just out there kind of out on the golf course on 16, just kind of getting a feel for the course. And I think it was around a 64. And I see this kid who's like, I mean, looks like he could be, I mean, he's 13 years old, but he looks like he'd have been 10 years old if you would have guessed just by his body type. I'm like, and he's playing this mammoth junior who's 6'3", at least two bills. And Miles lost that match on 16 green, but I took a video of his swing and posted it to my Twitter. And just was so impressed by first his action. I was like, man, what a good golf swing. And he was playing a kid from Northwestern, lost, watched him shake the dude's hand on 16. And then I watched him go to the 17th tee and I didn't know what he's doing. And he just puts the tee in the ground, puts the ball on the tee, and then he goes and finishes out his round. And I've never seen a player do that after he loses. You know, most of the time you just walk in, and Miles went and he said, I'm going to go finish my round. You just remember things like that, right?
Yeah.
With especially a 13-year-old kid, it's just looking inside of obviously a really talented player, but just someone that wanted the opportunity to keep going and keep playing and keep competing it was so cool to see. And then I've kept an eye on him over the years, and he's like the Scotty Scheffler of junior golf. He doesn't really lose anything, and he wins by a lot. He's a player that I don't know if he'll go to college. Might do 4 years for all I know, but he's going to be, everybody's going to want this kid on his team. Just, we haven't had a prodigy type of junior golfer like this in which has caught our eyes. And I think Akshay Bhatia was probably a player that was comparable. Maybe it's just because it's a lefty thing.
I was going to say another sweet swinging skinny lefty.
I'm a big fan of any junior golfer that's a lefty because I think they're always going to be the next Phil Mickelson and Akshay Bhatia, now Miles Russell. So and shout out to my boy Corey Whitsitt, same thing. He was a stud junior golfer as a lefty. Unbelievable. Now he's a top 25 and playing Veritex next week in Dallas. So good for him. I guess I don't know if he's homeschooled or not, but he's going to be missing a lot of school right now.
Just keeping it rolling. I mean, I love that story so much. And I think you can read into that story a lot of different ways. And, you know, in none of those scenarios can you know what's going on inside Miles' head at that age when he's 13. But I think where I, you know, go with that is like, kid just loves playing golf. You know, and I think sometimes that gets lost in the shuffle of competition and, you know, professional golf and how much money are we making for these, you know, these new elevated events with bigger purses. And it's just a kid that's out there. It's like, hey, I'm playing Bandon Dunes and I know my match is over, but I'd love to just kind of finish out this round. And I love that. I think it's awesome. And excited to see how he does this week. And I think I have this right. I think he's part of that new you know, that new developmental team that was recently kind of launched by the USGA, where they have like a national team now, and he's part of that team, one of the younger members of that team. So, you know, he's going to get good instruction, good support, and Scott can be the limit for Miles Russell. So super cool to see that. So this is the part of the show where we would normally get really nervous and make our one and done picks, but now we've just, the pressure is off us now. We actually tied this week. We both earned 12.25 points for your pick of Tommy Fleetwood, for my pick of Cam Davis. I believe that was a T43, I want to say. Whatever it was, it wasn't great. I don't think
any of our players would have, I liked some of the players that I wouldn't have ever picked any of the guys.
We actually didn't. I mean, I think our backup picks did better than our actual picks. You had I had Brian Harmon, who finished T12 at 11 under.
That's right.
So that wasn't a terrible shout. And then let's see, where did Siwoo ended up? 9 under T18. So, I mean, again, we're just a few more FedEx Cup points, but not a ton more. Mm-hmm. Now this week is an interesting week. Because this is the strategy that I suggest to anybody who is in a one and done pool, you know, of any size or any duration, is go find a guy you like, who you think is going to play really well this week, and then make sure he has an obscure partner who you wouldn't pick any other week, and then pick that guy. Because you can just ride that guy's coattails. It's a free shot. You don't have to burn. I did this a couple years ago with Cam Smith and Mark Leishman. I think when they came in second or one, it was like, yeah, just going to use Leish this week, and I'm not going to use him the rest of the year. And now it's I have another Cam Smith usage later in the season.
You don't want to burn two top guys this week. So I'm with you.
Burn a guy who's playing with a guy who you think is going to play well. Like, this would be a great week for, if you believe in Matt Fitzpatrick, use Alex this week. You're probably not going to use Alex again the rest of the season. Like,
you can't take Cantlay and Xander. You just can't do it.
You cannot
burn both.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just kind of thumbing through the field here.
Is it me or you first this week?
It is you first, right? Because you had Scotty first at the Masters. So
I know who I'm taking.
Okay. Well, then fire away, sir.
I will be taking – oh, God, that team just popped. Oh, gosh, that was a late pop. now we're just going to start picking, like, backups and backups to our alternates, so we eventually, like, had a winner. Like, it's like oh, yeah, we did like them.
And then we're going to end up exactly where every other golf prognosticator is. Like, where it's just, we'll give you 8 picks, and we can say we won no matter what.
I will be taking the team of Davis Thompson and Andrew Novak this week.
Well, you have to pick who it is that you want. You only put one name on the list. That's the whole point for the one and done. You don't burn both. So that's why I say, because that's the way every one and done pool I'm in works. So you just pick the one player, and then you get points for both of them. So do you want Davis or do you want Andrew Novak?
Davis.
There you go. Davis Thompson. I will enter that right now. Why do you like these guys here this week? Why do they pop for you?
I like both because I think both have had good years so far. Davis, I think it's a really good course fit, really good mid-iron player, drives it far. Andrews also drives it far, good iron player. I just think tee to green, both of these guys, they have good weeks. As long as the putter is like somewhat warm, I think they'll be a top 10 type of team. I love it.
I think it's a good. So I'm spinning through now. I think I know where I'm going. But yes, in the spirit of just like throwing a bunch of stuff at the dartboard to just see what kind of sticks, so we can claim it. I love the Højgaard brothers are playing together. I love more brothers. Let's do more brothers. I love that.
You could take Bo Hosler,
and
that would be like, you could have you don't have to use Wyndham Cart.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, gotcha. That's kind of how you game the game.
I probably should have just done that, but whatever. I like this
stuff. I mean, it's still technically your turn. You can have me change it if you'd like me to. But
give me Bo Hosler.
You want Bo Hosler? All right.
I just so you know, when Davis Thompson and Andrew Novak win, that was my original pick.
with apologies to both Davis and Andrew.
Give me Bo Hosler. I think. I just like that combo of those two guys.
Well, then this is good because this is going to be themed because we're going to go right off of the discussion that we just had because I'm going to go with Kurt Kitayama.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I like the way Colin is, you know, putting it right now. You and I were out at Augusta Wednesday or Thursday. So Colin playing with Kurt and Minwoo. And I think it was Siwoo were all together. So, you know, good vibes, tuning it up a little bit. I'm going to go with Kurt. I like that pairing this week. So you have it. Those are our one and done picks. And it's amazing. We thought we were on a heater, but we weren't anywhere near as hot as Scottie Scheffler himself is on the actual golf course.
All right. Are we just suggestions for lineups? Are we going to do that or no?
Yeah, so this is another one. I mean, let's just run through some names because this is another one where, again, you get – if you go and play DFS right now and you plug in Kurt Kitayama's name or Bo Hossler's name, I think they're actually – there are a couple games where they're priced the same.
I was about to
say. The team gets a unified price.
Yeah, so that wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, that would not make any sense. Let me pull up pull up a lineup here, see if there are any prices out, because that kind of helped us put together a lineup. Let's see what we got here. Who are you? You obviously you like. Here we go. Let's see. Let's see if we got. Let me see if I can't just open this up. Oh no, we don't have prices. Okay, that's really bad radio. Really bad podcast. Who else do you like though?
I think Sepp's been playing really well. So like he's playing with Bryce Garnett. I think Sepp. He was a guy that I picked in our players that I think that could win a major. I think he's been playing really well. Keith Mitchell's played well out here as well at this golf course, and he's playing with Joel Damon, who's found some form of late. So that team would be really fun team if they happen to win, especially considering they're in New Orleans.
Yes.
And Aaron Rye's iron game's really good. He's playing with David Lipsky. Who can run really hot or cold. So that team could be like a potential fireball pairing.
They got off to a really hot start last year, if I recall. Really started really strong.
I would try to find guys that have played with each other in this format. I think it's so awkward trying to figure out each other's game. So I would lean more into guys that you know are have played a bunch together. I really like the team of Austin Eckroat and Chris Goddard a lot. Two really good friends, play a bunch of golf together. Goddard, this is a perfect golf course for him and hasn't really done anything yet on the PGA Tour, but has like the length to be able to, you know, for an Austin Eckroat to, for his iron game that's been so good this year. So that's a really interesting and intriguing pairing as well. Taylor Moore and Matt Neesmith. You were high on Taylor Moore last week. Mm-hmm. Matt Neesmith's a really good player as well.
I mean the one that I just want to take an honorary punt on, just because of the story that was told on this show that was like top three stories of all time, golf related stories, is Kisner and Scott Brown. Love getting that band back together. I mean, if you haven't heard it, go back and it's somewhere on our socials, the story about those guys refusing to chip all weekend long. It was playing the same group as Jason Duffner. I mean, it's so I'm not good. I don't know. I mean, they're obviously Kis not playing as well as he'd like to right now, but that story in and of itself, the fact they're back here together, I just love that so much. I just want to take a punt on those two for that reason.
There you go.
And that reason only. I mean, I think you hit some big ones. Most of the ones I like, I'm curious to see how the Cootie brothers play together this week. I know that neither of them has been kind of in great form.
Like if they're not pairing the Cootie brothers and the Højgaard brothers, like there's something went terribly wrong.
Yes. Yes. And then it's got to be either the Cooties, the Højgaards, or the Fitzpatricks. Like we need to see those guys.
Too. Just let them play six and
and let them play music and with no shoes too as well. It's New Orleans. Like let's have some fun with it. Okay, I like it. That's some solid coverage there for anyone who's playing DFS Zurich Classic Week, which is a hardcore crowd, I'd say.
Yeah. that's a good point. This is a very niche audience we're speaking to here, but we love to have you. That's These are the real degens showing up right now.
Yes, I'll be right there with you. So that's a wrap for you know our RBC Heritage recap, our Zurich Classic preview. But we'd be remiss to not leave this with kind of where we started, which is you're heading on a golf trip right now. You're sitting in Justin Thomas's office. I heard some reports on various outlets this week that Keegan Bradley was out on this trip. He's back in on this trip.
And since he's out, so we've had Keegan go, he was in, then I think he's been in and out like a couple different times, but now officially labeled as out.
I'd love to hear the designated injury report list for as to why he's out, because he was over on Thursday.
Yeah, I think it's supporting one of his kids is like in the championship of their baseball or something.
Go to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Colt's going to be there
being replaced by my partner, Ricky Fowler.
No way.
I'm so excited.
This trip's going to be electric.
Why don't we catch up when I get back on Wednesday or Thursday, and we can maybe recap.
Yes, I'd love to do that. We have to get something on the show to kind of recap this, either whether we're doing that on the backside of Zurich or just blowing out that whole episode. But I love that. Excited for you. Play well. That place is a lot of fun. What else we got for you? Oh, and then we have we'll see what ends up in the feed on Wednesday as well. We're looking forward to a guest on Wednesday. That should be a lot of fun. So we'll see if that comes through. But for now, that's all we got. Smiley, any thoughts you want to, any trophies you want to steal on your way out of the office before you head out, or anything you want to leave the good people with?
y'all don't remember me winning the, let's see, the CIMB Classic. These are big trophies, man.
Large, very large.
Oh, I forgot I won the BMW. That was a really fun memory.
Easy one to forget. Yeah, it's just so many trophies. Well, on that note, appreciate you joining us on the verge of the vacation, and appreciate everyone who is watching and listening with us. And we'll be back here to talk to you very soon.